Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
I have a couple of little philosophies, and I think you'd probably appreciate these. Working for yourself is not for the faint-hearted, and I also say that you can't be a good salesman until you're 30.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tarun Shum, and in this episode, we're chatting with David Shaw, CEO and founder of WSC Group. David Shaw and his team of 30 staff regularly give advice to property investors all around Australia. Follow his journey and advice here to help you propel into property investing. Also, before we delve into this episode, go over to propertyinvestory.com and subscribe to receive your free property investor case studies, where you'll learn how to generate passive income from your properties. Go there now to sign up for free. David Shaw is a property tax guru and has watched his company grow from humble beginnings to having 6 offices.
I'm the CEO and founder of WSC Group, and we're certified practicing accountants. And the business has been going for about 15 years, actually. And as the founder of the firm, I've seen it grow from just me, doing some work, tax return work and other work at home, to we've now got 6 offices, 30-odd staff, and we do over 5,000 returns for our clients during the year. So what started off, I think, is my goal to have a reasonably small client base has changed a little bit over the years, and particularly in our property investor area, because we've actually seen so much need for clients to get the right advice in terms of property tax, because it's actually not that simpler area, to be honest. So I'm really proud of what we do at WSC Group, and we basically have coverage all over Australia in terms of being able to service our clients.
Fantastic. Well, that's very interesting, David. Just out of curiosity, what does WSC stand for?
It's a bit of a story to that, and I've had mentors over the years, and the mentors always said to me, never put your own name in your actual business name, because someone gets on the phone and rings and says, can I speak to Mr. Shaw, for example? And there's only so many phone calls you can take in a day. And over the years, I've developed a really good team. So originally, WSC stood for myself and a former business partner over 10 years ago. It used to be called Wood Shaw & Co. And I like the name still, and we shorten it to an acronym, because everyone seems to shorten their names these days. Even the Melbourne Cricket Ground's called the G now. And so we just shorten it to from Wood Shaw & Co. to WSC. And then as we got multiple offices, we thought, well, we are a group. So that's where WSC Group came from. We've liked the sound of it, so we've just continued with it.
So what does Shaw do on a day-to-day basis?
My day is very varied. Once a week, I get on a plane at the start of the day. But if not, I'm doing lots of personal training and walking and keeping my fit nice early in the morning. And basically, I came in and on a given day, we'll come into the office, do 4 or 5 appointments. I'm still very hands-on as CEO. And then a part of my day is also spent guiding and directing staff. So a combination of keeping up with our clients that have up-to-date issues they want to discuss, as well as making sure that the ship is steered and that our staff are mentored and given the appropriate direction. That's most of the day spent, and it's amazing how fast the day goes. You look up at the clock and it's already 6 o'clock, and that's a sign that I really love what I do during the day, because if I didn't, I suppose I'd be clock watching and waiting for every second until the day ends. So days go fast, and also we do other bits and pieces. Obviously, financial literacy is a big part of our business, and we also closely monitor our own financial literacy in our business as well. So I do spend a portion of my day monitoring our own business as well as the businesses of our clients. And that probably sums up what happens most days. We do a combination of those three things.
Shaw is a born and bred Sydneysider. His family originated from southern Sydney in the suburb of Oatley, where he currently resides.
I grew up in, always been Sydney born and bred, grew up in a place called Oatley, and I've actually just recently moved back there in the last 5 years, but came from a good, solid, hard-working family, and went to Herschel Boys High School, a school not of any great note, but was certainly had a good disciplinary system, and certainly we learn a lot from our teachers. They did a really, really good job. So spent time in the St. George area. A little story about that is everyone asked me why I actually in the rugby league go for the Sydney Roosters, but that probably is outside the scope of this interview, but I'm born and bred in the St. George area, so who can figure that one out? So but that's what I did. Did a lot of sports when I was growing up as well. So always loved sport. We had a tennis coach in school, did cricket, did a lot of swimming. And I've always carried that through that, into my adult life, that you've got to be active outside your working life, doing lots of sport and keeping yourself nice and health and fit.
For sure, he has always enjoyed both accounting and economics. He completed a Bachelor of Business and considers himself to be a frustrated economist. He says that accounting has always been a big part of his life.
So it's actually interesting because as most of your listeners will know, choosing a career is a very daunting thing. And when I got to year 11 and 12, I really enjoyed economics. So sort of when I got to the end of did the HSC and got admitted to university, I went and did a Bachelor of Business. And in that first year, I really enjoyed accounting. Although I was initially attracted to a business degree because of the economics side of things, I actually chose a major in accounting while still keeping a sub-major in economics. So I still class myself as a frustrated economist sometimes as well. But we had the dual, the dual focus. And I think I really enjoyed accounting from university. And it's a well-known fact, you either like it or you don't in this industry. But certainly I found the accounting in the real world was probably more interesting in doing theoretical maths in year 11 and 12. So I'd sort of dropped that and enjoyed the practicality of actually looking at balance sheets and profit and losses and becoming financially literate. So I don't like to admit it. In fact, I tell the joke that I've been an accountant since I was five, but I've been doing it since for 33 years now. And I never really thought about doing anything else in my professional life. And I've always always been involved in the accounting industry.
That's great. I was going to say, gosh, at 5 years old, I think most of us don't even really know how to do any balance sheets and profit and loss statements yet. So congratulations.
I try to convince everyone I'm still 38, but I'm sort of losing the battle as the years go by,
After university, Shaw went on to have a varied career, starting out at Deloitte, and then moving on to a private family-run company in which he eventually became the CEO. The experience helped propel him to start his own business.
Started off working in Deloitte's and then spent the next 10 years working in manufacturing companies, perhaps back in an age where there was more jobs for accountants in manufacturing. And I think that gave me a really, really good groundwork in terms of analysing financials. And actually spent another 10 years with a very well-known privately owned family-run company in Australia before I started this business. And I actually, at the end of that part of my career with the family-run company, I ended up being CEO of that company and was on the board for many years. So I say that was my entrepreneurial apprenticeship, and I've taken that through now into WSC Group over the last 15 years. So I'm really thankful, actually, for the very career I've had, 15 years basically in public practice and 15 years in commerce, operating in what I call running real companies. I have a couple of little philosophies, and I think you'd probably appreciate these. Working for yourself is not for the faint-hearted, and I also say that you can't be a good salesman until you're 30. The reason being, particularly in the industry I'm in now in public practice, because most clients look at you and say, well, my child is about your age, and it's very hard to be someone's advisor when their kids are about your same age. So I've always said, under 30, it's difficult to start your own business. I know there's plenty of successful examples that have done that. But I think the best time to start your own business is somewhere between about 30 and 35. And if you don't do it by the time you're 40, it could be getting too late. So I think I've been, just feel very blessed to have had that good cross-section of experience. And I love what I do now because I get to see different businesses and different clients in so many different spheres of life. And I think that really has helped me see what does and doesn't work. And plus, I've tried to help our clients, for example, avoid what we see other clients do that doesn't work. So, I've had, it's been an interesting 33 years. I can't say there's ever been a period where it's been dull and boring, that's for sure.
Shaw's advice to young people is to gain what he calls an apprenticeship of experience for 10 years in an industry before trying to launch your own business. He generously spends his spare time mentoring young people from different industries.
I was just going to say one thing more, that I think a lot of times, young people are very enthusiastic when they finish their degree, but they've got to serve their apprenticeship. And I say to all young people, and I mentor young people in different spheres, now, you must serve your apprenticeship for a period of about 10 years. Then you should consider maybe starting your own business in that industry. But 10 years, I think, is a really good time frame for really learning and applying your trade under some good mentors.
I totally agree. And did you have any influences from, say, your parents that inspired you to actually get into property or even accounting, I should say, at a young age?
It's really interesting that point, because you hear so many varied stories. And I think there's a group of people in society that, they look at their parents and they end up being inspired by their parents' business or what they've done and follow in that family sort of line, so to speak. There's also another group of people in society who perhaps saw what their parents did and thought, I think I can do better. And they love their parents, but, I probably fall more into that group, in that my family were very hardworking, but only ever had their own house and came from that mentality of pay off all your debt, don't take much risk. And no one actually in our entire family went on to beyond year 10 at school. So they didn't have a lot of advice in a lot of areas for me because they hadn't done it themselves. And although they were very supportive, I was the only person that's ever gone on to year 12, ever done university, ever run my own business. My father ran his own business for many years. But siblings, the only person that's ever run my own business. So I think it's I really love and appreciate my family, and they've done it. They're so supportive to me. But I suppose they weren't able to give the support in that area. And it's one of the things now that motivates me to mentor different young people in business, because I know how hard it was sometimes when you couldn't fall back with your family and get a little bit of advice. I mean, my father died when I was 20, and, you know, the advice wasn't there anyway. So it's really interesting, but I see that a lot with a lot of young people, that they hadn't really, you know, got a lot of advice. But, you know, sometimes you just have to make your own way, don't you?
Shaw's property investing started around the same time he established WSC Group. He realised he had spent a lot of time advising others on wealth creation, but it was time for him to take the plunge.
Okay, well, it's a good story, and it's sometimes you're motivated into action because having just spent 10 years in a large privately run firm in about 2002, I decided I was going to start WSC Group. Sometimes you get a bit of a bee in your bonnet, and I thought, you know what, I've been doing a lot, working very hard for helping a lot of others, but I hadn't really spent a lot of time thinking about my own wealth creation. Yes, I'd bought a house. Yes, I'd, you know, I was on my third house by the time 2002 rolled along. But I hadn't really explored too much on the property investing side, except I was very, you know, knowledgeable in terms of the tax side of things. And I actually went a little bit crazy from about 2002 to 2007 and accumulated over 20 properties in that time.
Wow.
So I just felt like I was running out of time. And it was probably not a bad time to be doing that, because in today's, you know, financial world, with some of the requirements that banks need, maybe I wouldn't have got half of those loans now, to be honest. It's just got so hard to get finance now. But I was very, very motivated to really make an impression on my property investing straight away. And interesting, I got in with some partners and we started refurbishing properties, and we went down a number of different paths, and some worked well and some didn't work that well. So I think I've matured in what I'm willing to do. I think probably 12 years ago I'd have a go at anything. Now I'm a little bit more cautious.
For sure, buying investment properties was a result of his self-confessed control freak nature. He has a preference for tangible investments like property that he can see, as opposed to having a boardroom of people make financial decisions on his behalf.
I think a lot of it came down to the control freak in me, is that I had the option, do I do more passive share investments, etc., or do I do property? And I just like something I can touch and feel. You know, I can look at a property and can say, yes, I can see that. And I never liked the idea of having people in obscure boardrooms make decisions that might affect my financial well-being. I've always been the sort of person I'd rather make my own mistakes. And, you know, if I made a mistake, well, that's bad luck. I have to wear it. And I think that was a real motivating factor for choosing property. Is that I could see, feel, and really it was concrete. It was a concrete asset, literally, wasn't it? You know, I mean, they're probably concrete in the asset, but, you know, it's just the way I was and the way I'm wired that made property particularly attractive to me and still is.
For sure, it's no surprise that his most profitable investment so far has been in his properties. He does, however, recognise the need to diversify his portfolio.
The only shares I have currently are shares in my own business. The rest of it's invested in property. Although in time, you know, I'll probably diversify a little bit, because as much as I love property, you probably need to have some liquid assets as well. So I think my focus still is very much on property, because we know that over time, if you're patient, you can make good money. Yes, there's headaches with tenants and other things like that. You know, and I came to work one Monday morning and the agent rang and said one of your properties is burnt down. And the joke was, oh, well, can only get better from this morning, can't it? So we've had a few burned down. And I'm not saying the property journey is without hassles, but I've just loved it anyway.
Yeah.
Particularly refurbishing and adding value to properties, that's been a lot of fun over the years.
Coming up after the break, we'll delve further into Shaw's journey as he shares his worst investing moment.
I tell you what, my worst investing moment was not doing my research properly and actually investing in.
He shares with us the important difference between investing in commercial properties and residential properties.
Business conditions dictate where you should buy. Good business conditions, for example, in Sydney at the moment, business conditions are very good, so commercial rents are strong. We all know that wasn't the case about 8 years ago. So you've got to be willing to ride that cyclical, you know, the economic cycle in commercial property.
His aha moment.
It was a large purchase because it was 16 units all in one lot. And then we proceeded to refurbish those properties and spent about $30,000 to $40,000 on them, strated them and sold them for $180,000 or $190,000. So it was around about $50,000 profit on each one of those.
And that's next. I'm Tyrone Shum, and you're listening to Property Investory. Are you looking at buying or investing in property? Like, what are the property hotspots, or how do I start my portfolio? Clever ways to renovate, and how to make an extra $50,000? Whether you're a new or experienced investor, learn from the experts at the Property Buy Expo in Brisbane on the 26th to 27th of May. Use the promo code PI for a free 2-day pass valued at $50. For tickets and more information, visit the website at propertybuyexpo.com.au. Now back to the show. For sure, his worst investment moment came when he decided to purchase some commercial property without researching. In spite of his unfortunate investment, he shares some very valuable lessons with us.
In this case, it was commercial property in a regional area and basically did that on the advice of some clients who are in the building industry. And what I learned from that investment decision is, don't take what anyone else says, no matter how knowledgeable or good they are at something. Make sure you do your own research as well, because one, if it goes wrong, you've got to wear that decision. And I'm a great believer in you can never blame anyone else for a bad decision. You've actually got to wear that decision and take responsibility of it. And I think that was really, those commercial properties were in hindsight the worst investments I've had. We have plenty of clients who've made fantastic investments in commercial property. So please don't let me think I'm just saying I'm saying commercial is bad, because you can have good investments in commercial and residential and bad investments in both. But the worst decisions are made when you don't, when you rush into things and you don't properly research.
Yeah, that's a really, really good and powerful learning lesson for the listeners out there. Can you just tell me a little bit more about how you found out about that particular property and why did you jump into it? Because obviously you said there was lack of due diligence, but how did you come across a property like that and why did you buy it in that area?
I had, as I said, large clients who, you know, were doing a lot of work in that area, and I was relying on their expertise. And one of the things I've learned is, the further you are away from a capital city, the more that can go wrong sometimes. And this was in a mining area, not exclusively mining, but it was in an area which was somewhat influenced by mining. So when the mining boom basically finished, people left town, and although it wasn't a residential property, some of the tenants, obviously, at the end of their lease moved out. And that's why the investments become problematic, because of the business conditions. And that's the thing about commercial properties. Commercial property very closely follows business conditions in an area. So you have to be a little careful what you do. But look, it was in a different time as well. It was pre-GFC. things were motoring along really well. But sometimes after a bit of an economic crisis, you know, if you're in fringe areas, you can get yourself into a bit of trouble. And that's precisely what happened in that situation. It's taken about 10 years to get through that.
He still owns some of the commercial properties, but admits he has sold about half of them so far.
At present, we've got challenges with tenants, but that's okay because we've worked through most of the issues and we know, you know, what we're up against, and basically have accepted the fact that those properties aren't worth as much as they were. And that's sometimes what happens if you, you know, you can get caught. And many of the people I've spoken to in recent years, and particularly in residential capital cities, there's probably less chance that's going to happen, particularly with residential. So you just have to be a little bit careful, have a good look at the demographic of the people that live in a certain area where you're going to invest, and make sure that area is not susceptible to, you know, large downturns where people leave town, etc.
And was this at the beginning or early part of your investing journey when you started buying properties, or was this at what stage? Yeah,
it was after that period I went and, you know, my crazy period where I bought lots of properties, and it was the first time I'd actually ventured out into commercial properties. So I'm always saying to our clients, no matter how many residential properties you've got, once you go commercial, you've got to have a different mindset about it. So business conditions dictate where you should buy. Good business conditions, for example, in Sydney at the moment, business conditions are very good, so commercial rents are strong. We all know that wasn't the case about 8 years ago. So you've got to be willing to ride that cyclical, you know, the economic cycle in commercial property, and certainly go into that with your eyes open. But yeah, no, I was experienced enough to probably know a little bit better, to be honest.
His aha moment came when he entered into a joint venture with a very experienced property investor and gained a profit.
A lot of the residential properties of refurbished blocks of units and done some really good things, and I'm really happy with what's happened with those over the years, although being we've had a couple of slow years. There is always a perfect project, and you've got to try to find that perfect project. And what project I did, I had a joint venture partner, is in 2007. And I don't know if you can remember back that far, but Peter Costello, in all his wisdom, the former treasurer, was allowing, it's a window of opportunity for people to actually put $1 million after tax into super. And, you know, this was over, you know, you can't obviously do that now. And people were selling properties and actually paying capital gains tax and actually putting their properties into super. Or people that had pre-capital gains tax properties were doing the same and paying no tax. It all sounded really good.
Shaw and his joint venture partner saw potential in an understated block of units.
Problem is, it was about a year before the GFC, and we bought a property, 16 units in a regional area, a really good, strong regional area, 60,000 population. And the actual vendor needed to sell these properties, and they hadn't strated them. So they had to sell them all in one line, and we bought those properties for $93,000 each, all being it was a large purchase because it was 16 units all in one lot. And then we proceeded to refurbish those properies and spent about $30,000 to $40,000 on them, strated them and sold them for $180,000 or $190,000. So it was around about $50,000 profit on each one of those. So it was a very healthy profit that we shared over a two-year period with my joint venture partner, and we were just in the right place at the right time. And a good rule to learn, as opposed to the mistakes I've made, is have a really good joint venture partner with you who's experienced in property, because this joint venture partner was very experienced, and he looked at the deal and he said, "We've got to do this," and trusting him and knowing him like I did, I said, "Yep, okay, let's do it." And that was a really great deal. And he sort of forced me to sell the whole lot, even though I didn't want to sell them and hold on to them. And that worked out well because prices sort of really flatline for many years after that. So sometimes it's actually in a refurbishment like that, you're better off to do the work, sell them, take the profit and move on to the next project, so to speak.
Shaw realised the importance of being patient when it comes to property investing, to know your property cycles and not to let emotions get in the way when making big decisions about property.
That particular vendor had owned that property since pre-GFC. The sad thing for that vendor is they sold that property for over $1 million, put that money into super and probably lost half of it during the GFC. And if that owner was just more patient, they could have refurbished that property themselves and started it themselves. And I'm sure they would have done about three times as well. And I think that's really a moment I look back and go, that's what we've always got to remember. When you get frustrated, when you've owned a property for a long time and you get a bit sick of it, and sometimes you just want to get rid of it, think twice and think about where you are in the economic and the property cycle. Because we have many stories of clients said, if only I kept that property, I would still, it would now be worth three times that. And I think that was an example of we picked up something that someone else had done all the hard work for, and in a very short period had probably made the profit they should have made. So it's a good lesson to learn. When you're a little frustrated, don't do anything rash, particularly when you've owned a property for a long time.
So, inspired by Shaw's story and his aha moment, we'll continue the conversation in a future episode on Property Investory, where we'll talk about what was holding him back initially.
My father-in-law was one person that held me back a little bit. He was always questioning, saying, why am I doing this? And it got me maybe a little bit doubting myself in terms of mindset.
The resources he recommends for successful property investing.
The original book I read was a book by a guy called John Fitzgerald, 7 Steps to Wealth. And I've had a lot to do with him over the years. And he was very certainly keen on helping.
And that's next time in a future episode of Property Investory. Also, if you haven't subscribed to receive your free property case studies that I only send out exclusively via email, then head over to propertyinvestory.com and subscribe. These real case studies are from experienced property investors where they share specific numbers of their portfolio, the strategies, and much more. Simply visit propertyinvestory.com to receive your free case studies. Thanks for listening.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.